The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Okay, good morning and welcome to Talk Saratoga on this beautiful Saturday, and hope you're doing well. It's 72 degrees, balmy, and no chance of precipitation. Oh, wait a minute. No. That's the wrong map I got up here. Let me apologize.
Minus six on my way in.
All right. Well, right here, on according to AccuWeather, Saratoga Springs, it's negative 13 degrees.
Oh, lovely.
And when I came in this morning at 7:15, it was negative 18. So we're getting a warming trend coming up.
Probably
because of global warming.
Exactly.
We're getting so warm here that the polar bears are dying off because it's getting so hot.
Yeah.
Anyway, Pat, I want to start the show this morning by making a couple personal observations. One of my favorite musical performers passed away Thursday, Meatloaf.
Oh, yes.
And he passed away from COVID at the age of 74. He had some underlying conditions, but his career spanned from the early 70s, mid-70s, when he was in, what's that?
Rocky
on Broadway.
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
The Rocky Horror Picture Show. Rocky Horror Picture Show on Broadway, and then recreated the role in the movie version. But his songs were really ballads. And his second or third album called The Bat Out of Hell, which had some great songs on it. It was the largest selling album so far in musical history, which you wouldn't think about
because
a lot of people wouldn't heard of. And you may have heard the song I Would Do Anything for Love, but yep. I wouldn't do that. That's one of them. But he was a great performer and a great musician, and they say an all-around great guy. So
that's good to hear.
We lost a great one there.
Yeah.
And in the same week, this week, we lost a comedian who was really popular in the 80s and 90s, Louis Anderson.
Yeah.
And he was a comical guy, too. Clean, great stuff. And what was the name of the guy who... The comedian, he was around the same time, and he talked like he had MS or something, but, you know, he slurred his words, but he was funnier than heck.
Yeah.
Well, those two were from the same era, and he passed away also, but I'll tell you, that was comedy, and so we lost two giants this week, and probably more, the way we're losing... people that I grew up with, and Meatloaf was only 74, so he really wasn't that old in the span of life. So, I'm sorry, I feel bad about that. So, Pat, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you. It's always good to see. I know.
You still have a face for radio, by the way.
What's that?
I said you still have a face for radio.
Oh, I do. Yeah. Well, I have a face only a mother could love.
That's
and
true.
She died of fright when I was born. So, anyway. Yeah. It's good to see you. You had a great trip.
Hawaii, yeah.
I
went to Hawaii for 10 days.
And yeah.
It really makes you appreciate... warmth when you come back to cold.
I can imagine. I'm banned from Hawaii, by the way, if anybody's listening. I started some grass fires over there, and probably 20 hula girls didn't have anything to perform with that night. So,
you're a clown.
Yeah, they don't carry fire extinguishers at luau's. So anyway, yeah. Barring that, we weren't going to start with this, Pat. But there was an article in Saratoga Today that really...
I'm reading it right now.
Yeah, really fried me. And we were going to talk about the subject. And the subject is charter change. Now, as most people local know that Pat and I have been involved in trying to change the form of government here in Saratoga to a more representative one and a more professional one since probably the mid-'80s. And the closest it ever got was two times ago, 10 votes it lost by. But I think
the ironic part about it, there was demand. We demanded three times for a recount and denied. I stress that denied three times.
Yeah.
So when you lose a vote with almost 10,000 votes by 10 votes and they deny a recount, they said the voting machines proved to be accurate.
Yep.
None of them were audited in Saratoga. They audited them, you know, like in Northumberland and places like that. But so I honestly.
Yeah.
Was surprised.
Well, we knew what party was in control of the recount. But anyway, there was an article this week and by Jane Wee.
Well, let's clarify. It's a reader's view. It's not an article. Right. So it's not a piece of news. View. It's an opinion.
Yeah, it's an opinion they wrote by Jane Wee and...
Connie, I don't know how to pronounce it. Wotowowicz.
Wotowowicz, and she's on the school board. And these two women were removed from, well, they actually left the Democratic committee because of instigating problems. And they were asked to leave, and 10 of them left, all friends of these two. Connie is on the school board. And need I say any more? But this article, or this Reader's Choice, said why the commission form of governor is great in Saratoga. Well, I'm going to have Pat go over some of the things because these two women, along with some of their counterparts on this committee that they have, their whole platform is made up of misinformation. And I don't say that as being a proponent of charter change, because you can have your opinion whether this form of government, the commission form, is a good one, or you can have an opinion that city manager, elected common council, with appointed heads of departments, is a better one. You can have your own opinion, but the problem is when one group promotes nothing but lies, I'm going to call it, right? That's what it is. They promote lies. I don't think there's a truth in whatever they promote when it comes time for a vote. So some of the
things... Well, Rick, you know, I don't want to say they're lying. They're just not telling you the whole story. And we'll get into that. But you go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you. But
No. You're the co-host.
In the article, they were featuring the ability to finish the Geyser Road Trail for public enjoyment. That sounds cool. That sounds great, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But behind the story is it took 18 years.
Right.
18 years. So anybody, a Girl Scout troop could complete a project in 18 years.
Right. A pack of monkeys could do
you,
that.
You just sit there and you're thinking, and I'm going through all this and going, you've got to be kidding me.
Well, one of the things that stood out to me, Pat, and, you know, I'm simple. You're involved a lot more with what's going on in this city than I am, but they had the audacity, and I mean the audacity, to say that the majority of this elected council that came in January... that the majority of them, of the five, were against the charter change. Well, if I'm not wrong, and you can correct me.
Yeah, go ahead.
Our commissioner of accounts, Dylan Moran, worked for the change.
Yes.
The commissioner of finance...
was on the committee.
Mira was on the commission and was for the charter change.
Yep.
And you have Ron Kim, the mayor, that was a spokesperson... for charter change. So I think Jane, who retired as a school teacher.
But not a math teacher.
Not a math teacher.
Math doesn't add up, but that's okay.
But I just want to say Jane and Carol, three out of five with a possibility of the commissioner of public work or public safety. I'm not sure about him, but three out of five is a majority. So that just, you just boosted the idea that you people have no clue what you're talking about, and you spread misinformation. This article really, and I'm going to call it an article and not an opinion piece, but really ticked me off. That was the thing that stood out to me the most. And there's other things in there, Pat, as you brought up the bicycle trail.
Yeah.
Why don't you, there, can you pick a few
completed the, like the Charter Commission, or excuse me, the Commission form of government completed the renovation of City Hall.
After a small fire.
We renovated it for probably a foolish reason, because they spent, I don't know, somewhere north of $13, $14 million on a building. They got a $2 or $3 million insurance check. I'm not sure if that's good government or not, but we'll I guess the proof will be in the pudding. But just to give you the grand scheme of things, we are the second largest city in this country to have a commission form of government. We're one of now two forms of commission form of government in this state. Sherrill, New York, or Sherrill, however you want to pronounce it, they had moved a couple of years ago to a city manager form of government. I don't know if you saw the article. I think I sent it to you, but Mechanicville is very serious about moving from a commission form of government,
right,
because of the inefficiencies of it.
Correct.
I just got wind the other day. In fact, there's a lot of articles. If you look in the Portland area, Portland, Oregon, which was the number one by far, the number one form of number one city in this country that had the commission form of government. Even their mayor, who's Ken Wheeler, who you've may seen on television during all the riots that were going on in Portland a couple of years ago. They're all saying it's time to change, time to change. So they've studied, and I wouldn't be surprised if, I'm not sure if it's a vote in June or not, but wouldn't be surprised if Portland's going to give it up too, because there isn't anybody that's standing up in defending it like these two women are for Saratoga. Because to say I'm going to cherry pick the accomplishments of anything, especially my example of the trail system taking 17 years, it's kind of inaccurate. So I'll agree with you in some respects. It's inaccurate, but it's easy to put a little lipstick on a pig. It really is. You got to hold them down, but it's easy to put lipstick on a pig.
Right.
And knowing what I know over these years, and knowing where governmental trends are going, we would be foolish to hold on to the commission form of government. Yeah. You're spending 85% of your budget on employee expenses. So all of these delays, this is where people want to talk about projects. A delay of 17 years, or a delay of 5 years, or, you know, it takes you 6 years to get a parking structure. You know, all these things. In a more efficient form of government, they happen quickly.
Mm-hmm.
5 years it took to get the solar park out. And at the 5 years.
Yeah.
A form of government that's efficient gets projects done quickly. And the reason I say that, how that important is, how, why that's important, is the fact that you're paying for that. You might look at the price of a normal parking garage costs you about $22,000 to $28,000 per parking spot, right? When they build
Correct.
It. But if you're spending governmental time for 4 or 5 years to do it, that's a lot of money you're spending to get a project already done. When in reality, these projects should be fast.
Now, they promoted the fact that the commission form of government was responsible for building that garage, settling the lawsuits. However, what they don't put in there is that that is the only parking garage in Saratoga Springs that is paid parking.
Yeah.
Okay? It's not near, I mean, it's close to downtown. Excuse me. It's close to downtown. But if you park in that parking garage and try to walk up the hill from the garage to Broadway in the wintertime, you stand a good chance of slipping and falling down. So any older couple, forget it. They're not going to park there and walk up to Broadway. And I suggested, and when they were talking about this, is to have a small shuttle for people that wanted to shop on Broadway. And the city center makes the money off of the parking fee. So why shouldn't they have a shuttle that can go back and forth on the hour, come back on the half hour. We're only talking about driving 3-4 blocks to get people up there. And, you know, anything sensible just went down the drain with that parking garage. And one of the other things, you know, Saratoga, when in the 90s started, well, in the 80s started a renaissance. And by the 90s, our Commissioner of Public Works, Tom McTighe, and his deputies and the council had this city looking beautiful. We won all kinds of awards for our downtown, the flowers, the stores were busy. And at the time, I commented that, you know, it takes many years because Saratoga wasn't in that great a shape from, let's say, the 40s up to the late 70s. It takes long for it to build up to the way Saratoga was. Mm-hmm. But, man, the slide down is quick.
Yeah.
And I honestly, in my opinion, I think that it's starting to slide. Downtown doesn't look anything like it did. We haven't won an award in, I don't know how, a couple decades. It's the stores. There's empty stores again. And there were empty stores before the pandemic, so you can't blame it on that. But it's all these things that they look at and they're saying, oh, how beautiful. The city just keeps growing and it's so beautiful. And I don't know where they're looking, but we are turning somewhat into a Portland. Maybe not riots and, you know, burning of the buildings downtown, but certainly the shape of downtown is changing. So they don't present both sides of the story.
Their facts are just misrepresented. The majority of the new council members were active participants in soundly defeating the effort to change charter. Really? Who are they?
Yeah.
Skip Scirocco?
Right.
Because maybe this other gentleman, I don't know him, but, you know, I know he's a Democrat, and the Democrats have always endorsed charter change. So, but again, needless to say this, is that it's just an opinion, and it's poorly written in the sense that they're representing things that are just matter-of-factly as if it was the commission form of government. But I'd encourage everybody to get online and just go and search, you know, the commission form of government in Portland, Oregon, and listen to what the people who have been actively involved in this form of government are saying about what it's doing, not only from a discrimination perspective, inclusiveness, and so forth, but for a city that size, and again, their commissioners are paid well over $100,000 each year. But even they are saying it doesn't serve the people. And so I could talk about this all day long,
right,
as we all have for decades, it seems like. And there's been more people than just us, of course.
Now, let me ask you a question. They made a reference in there that the charter change group said that women couldn't get elected to office. That I never heard of that before.
Well, that statement came out in probably 2005. Mayor Lenz appointed a commission that I was on at that point. And at that time, one of the things it represented was that there's very few women had ever been elected to this form of government in Saratoga Springs. Subsequent to that, that has changed, where many went. Joanne Yepsen, we've had a number of different female mayors, but so from a pure gender perspective, that was accurate 15 or 20 years ago.
That was accurate, but it's not that they couldn't be. We said they couldn't be elected if we kept the charter form, which is crazy. I don't think that we ever said that no woman can get elected. We're saying no woman can get elected.
It was really, and Portland, forget about what these two ladies, go read what's going on in Portland, and you'll see that everything that's been said over the years from all the various efforts to change this charter are being said in Portland, and they're the exact same issues. You know, we don't represent parts of the city because certain types of people run for office, and maybe the underprivileged are not getting represented, and so forth. So these naysayers are just saying nay to something and taking credit for things that are normal, everyday business that a city should be doing and has been doing. So, you know, I always, there's so many analogies to do it, but I mean, like, am I giving up on charter change? Absolutely not. In fact, this kind of article has kind of re-energized my thought process. Yep. And then to see what's going on in Portland and hear the key players that were always steadfastly in opposition to charter change. They voted, I think they voted 5 or 6 times already and said no each time, but that's not going to happen again. No. When the mayor stands up and says, we have to change, and many of the, I think they have 5 city council members, and several of them during their election process said it's time to change. Mm-hmm. So I think you're going to see Portland go. So we'll have the distinction of being the largest city in the country to have the commission form of government And I'm not sure that's an award you want to win.
Well, one of the things, too, is, you know, we look local. And Mechanicville lost, you know, like many small cities, has lost their industry over the years. But they're having a small renaissance now. And I think what they're really planning is that they want to start rebuilding in more of a rebuilding fashion. Mm-hmm. And they've got a great base. And I think they're realizing that the commission form of government just won't be able to do it.
It doesn't work here. So these misrepresentation of facts are comical. It doesn't work here. I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine who's in the construction business. They were averaging 14 weeks for a building permit. 14 weeks.
Yeah.
That's efficiency? That works well?
Right.
14 weeks. You want to put a deck on your house, you want to remodel a bathroom, and you have to wait over 3 months to get approval for it?
Sure.
And that's just the start of the process. And so it never has served its citizens very well. There are people like this that blow hard and up the and misrepresent the facts. But I'll tell you right now, as soon as we change, we'll be like, what took us so long?
Yeah.
And it's unfortunately, it's like trying to talk to a person who smokes cigarettes to stop smoking. And they're like, I feel great. Well, okay.
Yeah.
This is such a comical piece. Well, I respect these people. They're welcome to their opinion. And then that's fine.
Most definitely.
I just think, passing the UDO, I don't know if anybody's read it, but it's nearly 1,000 pages.
Now, the UDO, for people that don't know, is the Urban Development
Ordinance.
Mm-hmm. And,
this, again, is putting politics back in the functionality, and that's the key word here, functionality. If you look at an organization and how it functions, not how pretty, not like the flowers or the Broadway's crowded. The idea is, are we solving the needs of the city in a timely manner? And I will tell you, in fact, I will ask you to tell me areas that we've handled things in a timely manner.
Well, look at the renovation of City Hall.
Yeah.
That started out as an $8 million project, ended up being a $12 or $13 million project.
Yeah.
Carpets were put in. Sure. I'm going to say the finance office that cost $20,000 mm-hmm. for an office.
Mm-hmm.
$200 chairs.
Well, there's hundreds of thousands of dollars. Well, the ironic part is you bought furniture when you went over, and not all of it, but most of the furniture was purchased when you went over to the rec center. When you left the rec center, they threw it away. I've got video of it. They threw it away. They said, gave it to other. They threw it away. And then it was whatever they had in dumps, they had in trailers out by the ice skating rinks, 6 or 8 tractor trailers, storage things on the ground. Again, threw them away. I got video. Yeah. Well, you can't get any traction. There's no. You can't walk into a meeting. I mean,
how long did it take to renovate City Hall?
No, probably a couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, come on. The building was standing. I mean, the fire was around the eaves of the building because of lightning strike.
A lot of it was water damage, Rick. A good friend of mine who happens to be on the DRC, he actually had a chance to go in there, and he's like, they're ripping out stuff that didn't need to be ripped out. But again, that's maybe a semantics aspect of it. But there was no ask for permission. It was more like, the five of us got together, and we'd all like to upgrade our stuff. Instead of saying, how as a municipality do you go out and spend $12 million and your budget's normally in the mid-40s to low-50s million each year, but you're going to spend, so they bonded $10 million. $10 million. How do you feel like that's good government?
Justify. Now, I do want to say, at one point they said that we want to eliminate deputies, which the deputies wouldn't matter as much as they do now. I mean, they're the deputies of a department. The commissioners are just council people and oversee the running of the department. The deputies run the department, make the 85, whatever, thousand plus the benefits and that. And that's okay. A lot of the deputies could be the department heads, excuse me, because they know how to run the department. Mm-hmm. So It's not that we want to get rid of deputies. We want to get rid of that position. Get department heads. And many of them, the ones that aren't appointed because they're a friend or whatever, that don't really know about the department until they are in it for 6-7 months, and then their boss has to run for re-election again in 5 months. But so it's not like, you know, everything was going to be thrown out. But that's irregardless right now. The thing that I... When I said that they lie, the majority of the council that was against the charter change was a lie. I mean, I know you said that they don't go into a lot of the background, but that's just out and out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the majority. Yeah. So anyway, that I just wanted to bring that up.
60% of your elected officials have never held office before. 60% of your deputies who run the day-to-day operation of those departments have never worked for city government before.
Or in the area that they're the deputies in.
Correct.
I mean, you know, let's face it.
Well, I think Jason T2's role now in public safety is certainly, a big step forward from a functionality perspective. And again, you pay for functionality, not beauty. You pay for functionality, the ability for you to go in and get whatever it is that you want taken care of in a timely manner. That's what you pay for. And whether it's you going in there or a business person downtown or a visitor to the city looking for something. But you know, you look at government, if you really dug in as deep as you want, these ladies are just making this all political banter. But the reality is, this is the worst functioning form of government in this country. And there is a reason why that for 75 years, not one government in this country in 75 years has adopted the commission form of government. There's been 720, I think, that have left the commission form of government in this period of time. Not one ever went back to it. So when someone wants to boast that this is such a high-functioning thing, they just don't know, or maybe we're that special. I don't think we are, quite frankly. We're a great city, don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But to sit back and say this thing works, I don't know what you happen to be smoking, but it certainly is something that might be altering your mind because... you know, this is functionality of government. The problem that we have is we think at 4 and 5, 6 years of getting something accomplished is okay. That's not what you pay, you know, 5, 6, 7% increases in our overall, you know, contracts and things like that. We're absorbing functionality into salaries. We're absorbing into bonds that we for buildings that, you know, I love the building. It looks great, but I'd really like the process to be different. At least we get a chance to see the drawings and talk about them. And I guess we got COVID. We got a million things to blame stuff on these days.
But this happened before COVID.
I wish they, you know, the whole truth, not just part of it.
Right. Listen, I want to get onto another subject, but
Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Oregon
is the biggest city right now, and when you read why they're changing, and it doesn't reflect here in Saratoga Springs, you're probably just a casual observer of city government. When you listen to what these folks who are very, very involved in city government and see, you know, why as far as representation and so forth, but they're looking to shift to the city manager with districts, a la wards. And it was music to my ears to read it, obviously, but it's disappointing that the same people say the same stuff all the time. In reality, I'm kind of hoping that another effort is put forward. I don't think any of the requests in the past have been wrong. But we always have this agitator, and I'll list Connie as an agitator in this respect. She's probably a fine person. I don't know her, but to say this stuff is like, just tell the truth.
I like Jane.
Oh, I do too.
Jane's, I think Jane's nice. A really neat lady, but you know, I mean, there comes a point. Want to end this with three quotes from commissioners and former commissioners of Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
All right. The first one, I'm a born and raised Oregonian and Oregonian, however. And I can honestly tell you that you went to the wrong place, my friend. Now, this is former or current commissioners. There are homeless camps where the garbage is piled up 6 feet high, and there's literally hundreds of bicycle frames laying around with all their other junk. And stolen cars that were stolen My work's parking lot has about 12 vehicles that have lost their catalytic converters in my parking lot right now. I have to pay to get them removed. So it kind of, pees me off when you say it's not that bad. And the second one said, this is what happens in the real world when an entire community fails to elect and hold accountable their leaders. Yeah. The next one says, it's not so bad. A tourist got attacked. Or, it's not so bad. That's what people say. A tourist got attacked with an axe in broad daylight by a homeless person. Someone was shot just after 8 a.m. just outside my office. But it's not that bad. Mm-hmm. And the last one, I drove through parts of downtown Portland in mid-May of 2021, which is this year. We stayed in Beavertown for a couple of days and Mount Hood for two more. What I noticed most was because of the riots, businesses were closed and boarded up. Without businesses, there were no shoppers walking through the areas. And without businesses in the area, downtown Portland will not recover. And when you start to see three or four empty stores in downtown Saratoga not being filled, when 10 years ago, if a store went out today, next week there would be another one in there. And there's three empty buildings that have been shut down, not boarded up, but shut down for maybe a year or two now. And that's unlike Saratoga. So those are comments from former, or one was from a current commissioner in Portland, Oregon.
You know, Mayor, I want to say his name, Mayor Wheeler. I may have that wrong, but the mayor of Portland who's been there, I think his name is Ted, and I want to say Wheeler, but we'll see. But his comments as a person who's been in office for quite some time and struggled through the riots that were going on in Portland that summer. And as you said, people in Portland are moving out. And I think there's a lot of shifting and growing. We know that, you know, in our region, people are moving to our region for a variety of reasons. All good, I hope. But, you know, we've got to really address this thing that has become so political, and the skewing of information is just wrong, I believe. And I think that's the fear, uncertainty, and doubt aspect of things. And we're not elaborating. And that's really where I'd rather like to elaborate on this and explain it so that people who have are a casual reader or a casual listener really understands what goes on, you know.
All right.
You know, but again, I could talk about this till.
Oh, I know. We can. We both can. I want to go to something lighter now.
Okay, cool.
And then we'll go back to other things. The New York Yankees.
Oh.
And baseball, there's 22 days, 15 hours, 24 minutes, and now 51 seconds to go to the pitcher and catcher's reporting to opening day if the contract gets settled, which yesterday there was a report out that they're not even close.
No.
And my feeling about that is that I think every baseball player, when you first come up and get on the major league roster, you get paid $200 million a year, all right? Out of that $200 million a year, they have to pay for the grounds crew. They all chip in and pay for the grounds crews of their stadium, put so many millions of their salary towards the payment of the bond that the owners took for the city, and pay for various other amenities of the field that they play on, that is provided to them. That and then they'll see. They're saying the owners make too much money. Well, then we'll see how much money that they can put towards, and see what it costs to build a stadium, have a maintenance crew to keep the grounds just so, PR to make these players look really popular, and let them see how it is to be part of a business, because baseball is a business. They get contracts, outside contracts, and they get paid good money with a good retirement and guaranteed contracts, by the way. So if you sign a $330 million a year contract for 6 years, and you break your leg and you can't play baseball anymore, you're guaranteed that contract.
Yeah.
So I think that's what should happen, because the reason they're not so close is that the owners won't give them any more concessions, which I don't know as a baseball player, when you look and see what they get, what more concessions can you have?
Right.
So anyway, to the Yankees.
Well, yeah. I've been kind of, twice a day I check ESPN to waiting for some news about trades or possibilities of free agent signings, things like that. And I am coming up dry every day. Well, and it's disappointing.
Really, they can't sign anybody right now, you know, until this is settled. And that's the problem. And in another week, the trading deadline is supposed to end. But you can't sign anybody.
Right.
But to start out, one of my favorite game analysts, Ken Singleton, has retired. Last year was his last year. And David Cohn said signed a contract with ESPN.
Just Sunday nights, though. He only does Sunday.
Well, yeah, he's cutting down. I mean, he did 75 games last year as an analyst, and he's down to, I think, 55 now. But he's a good analyst. Good. I mean, he knows the game.
And he's been around to various teams, so he's familiar with the whole league.
Oh, most definitely. And he's a very into analytics. And, I mean, yeah, you can take analytics a certain way, but baseball's still a game played by people. And but anyway, they're looking at Carlos Beltran, who was a good player, and he was a manager of the New York Mets recently that was fired. But they're looking...
He never managed a game.
No, I know.
He's tied up in that whole Houston sign stealing.
That's right. But he's being looked at as the number one contender to take Ken Singleton's place.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And he's among the group of analysts that YES is looking for, and that's the Yankee Entertainment. YES. is looking to pick up games, and he's the number one person in. Yeah.
So, I was disappointed because I always admired him, not only when he played for the Yankees, but also other teams. He's a phenomenal talent. No doubt about it. He had wonderful skills in baseball.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I always just, I always thought he was one of those good guys. And I think, you know, the sign stealing thing obviously got a lot of attention at that point. And I'm sure we've been stealing signs from one another for decades, if not all,
if not
all
more.
Of baseball.
Well, that little box in center field for Boston Red Sox. Where they put the numbers down, they supposedly had a camera in there for 25 years looking in at the catcher. So, I mean, it's done.
Yeah.
You know, it's like pine tar.
Yeah.
What pitchers used to have pine tar inside their hat, on their pants, in their pants pocket?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, what is cheating? You know, we talk about steroids. We talk about off-the-field antics like Pete Rose, things like that. And it's a game. It's a game. And, it's a big money game. And I mean, I'm a big, huge fan and whatnot. But the idea is I don't want, you know, the American public to suffer because of it. I think it's important that we just get back to, it's like getting back to work. Back to work, guys. Let's play some ball. It's a nice distraction in a time when we have a series of other things that aren't necessarily going so well. And, you know, get back to playing the ball games that the kids enjoy and the older folks enjoy.
Well, it's nothing like it used to be in the.
Now, wait a minute. You got to come clean. You got to tell these people the truth. How many Yankee tattoos do you have?
Two Yankee tattoos.
How many people in this country do you think have two Yankee tattoos?
Not many.
Okay. Just so I'm a Yankee fan too, but I just want how extreme you are.
Actually, I've got three, but I can't show anybody the third one. but anyway.
I feel bad for people that have put tattoos.
That's right.
On that area of your body.
On January 16th, the Major League Baseball trade rumor site had a proposed bit of unorthodox scenario where the Yankees signed free agent third baseman Chris Bryant. And I don't know if you read anything about that.
That's interesting.
Yeah, he's
a ball player.
Right. And because with the errors that Gleyber Torres made last year as shortstop, they're going to move him back to second base. And LeMahieu and Gio Urshela are going to share time at third base, but they don't want LeMahieu as a permanent third baseman. Yeah. He'll go between first and third because he had an off year last year, but he's a phenomenal player, and they think he had an off year because he had a sports hernia.
Mm-hmm.
So
LeMahieu?
LeMahieu did. And so, because I'll tell you, every year before last year, he's a phenomenal player.
Yeah.
So if the Yankees sign Bryant and move LeMahieu over to first base with Urshela in a part-time role, they would be more inclined to trade Luke Voit. because this Bryant can play left field, right field, and third base. So and he's a good player. Yep. I think he's was on the Giants as the last team, and now he's a free agent.
He was very long with the Cubs and did a great job with the Cubs. As the Cubs were trying to retune their organization, they obviously got rid of Rizzo and a variety of different players that moved on. Where is Rizzo? Is he going to play this year for the Yankees?
Well, Rizzo is still in the talks with the Yankees. He wants to stay with the Yankees, and the Yankees want him, and it's probably a money contract.
Yep.
But, I mean, the Yankees will end up signing him if they want him.
I think so, too.
Because he wants to stay.
Yeah,
so.
I'm not sure if we need Voit we have a plethora of infielders, when you think about it. Not only on the active roster, but down in the minors. We've got some phenomenal shortstops. Obviously, they don't always have to play shortstop. I think we saw where, A-Rod came over and played third. But I think, and my friends who I talk baseball with a lot hear me say this all the time. Gary Sanchez has to go.
Well, that's in the next.
But there's no catchers out there.
No, they said this is one of the lousiest year for free agent catchers in a decade. So what they're thinking is they're going to have to keep them this year and hopefully next year get rid of them, because there's two players that three. That I never cared for the not I didn't care for him, but I've always been suspect. One is Gary Sanchez, the other is Aaron Judge, and the third one is the one they got from the Marlins. I can't even think of his name right now. Stanton. And the only reason I say that is because they're injured so many times. Mm-hmm. Now, Stanton and Judge, obviously, are great players, especially Judge. Yep. I mean, that man is amazing. But they're hurt so many times that they can't keep the consistency of a winning streak in place, because it's very hard to replace them at their level. And they can replace them with some good players, but they're not consistent as they are. Sanchez has to go.
Oh, when we think about it, he's the only person on the team that touches the ball every play.
Yeah.
Every pitch. So you've got, as a catcher, as we all know, you've got to be first and foremost good defensively. Second, and probably second importance, is be able to handle that pitching staff. And then third, it might be nice to have leadership. And fourth is the bat.
Yep.
Sanchez is known for the bat, poor leadership, poor defensive. He doesn't really handle the pitching staff. And because you're seeing the big prominent pitchers that come in don't want him as their catcher. They have to find another catcher to catch the Garrett Coles of the world. So you just sit back, but there's no one. In fact, again, it goes back to that point of a backup catcher, you can count on like a 220, 230 batting average, but they can handle the rest. And Sanchez, over the last couple seasons, is no better than that. In fact, I think he's worse than that.
Well, he
doesn't hustle, and he's starting to affect like Gleyber Torres, who's kind of suspect at best. When I go back, I've seen him kind of lollygag along to first base.
Oh, yeah.
He's definitely got the skills. I don't think he has the range that we'd like to see at shortstop. That's why he's going to second. I say range. He might get to the ball, but he can't throw it to first base with that situation. But I will say, the Yankees have a couple of key positions they need to fill, but they have an abundance of pretty good ball players.
Oh yeah.
What do you do with LeMahieu? He's a perennial 300 hitter.
Yep.
Do you put him on the bench 50% of the time?
No.
You put him at first base. Put him at third base. Is Gio better as a backup at the shortstop in second base era? But I think you've got to put a LeMahieu on the field every day.
Every day.
Every day.
Yeah, and he's used to playing every day. That's the type of player.
So he's not going to be around forever.
Exactly. Well, one of the things I will give Sanchez a triple plus is his arm to throw out runners. There are runners that are afraid of stealing on him because he does get the ball to the second baseman and quick, and they do hang around first base, the runners on first, a little bit longer because they're afraid. But lately he's been throwing him over to second baseman's head and to the right. He'll get him there fast, but his accuracy is starting to wane a little. But I would still want him back there. Not that I want him back there, but if I would want him back there just for his arm. Yep. And you can't have a catcher that is just known for throwing somebody out. Yeah. Matter of fact, the backup catcher who, like you said, does bat 220, 230, really can pop them out of the park.
Yep.
And you wouldn't know it, surprisingly, when you see him, because he's a thin, lanky guy, not that tall. But
he's a right-handed batter, too.
Yeah, Yamaguchi or some like that. But he's great. He catches for Derek Cole. Derek Cole wants him as his personal catcher. And he does catch other pitchers, too, but he can handle Derek Cole. And he's probably the premier pitcher in baseball, or one of the top three. And so it's going to be interesting because, you know, with all the great players that the Yankees have, they are in a rebuilding year because they have to find places to fill these good players with. Mm. And they have a great farm system. And usually when they bring up these young guys, they're good. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are major league players. So it takes a while to get acclimated, though, to the major leagues.
But why? My question to you is, you look at Tampa, you look at Toronto, you know, you've got Bichette and all these young guys coming up and they're playing. And yes, their dads were pro baseball players before, you know, the three guys in Toronto really, but they're in their early 20s and they're all stars. So I guess my question to you is, when's the right time to bring somebody up and put them in, it's like you can sit your children in the car. They can watch you drive, and they can drive in the back roads. But when you put them on the Northway or down in New York City, when do they get real life experience? I think in baseball, I think I'd bring these guys up a little bit. But we have those contracts.
Right.
And that goes back to the thing you were talking about, the Major League Baseball Players Association. If you have a certain amount of time, you lose your free, you lose them
that time
from a contract perspective.
Then you lose that time to become a free agent.
Correct.
And things like that. And
it's
It's a game. It's a game. But I remember when Albany Colony Yankees had a team.
Yeah.
All right. Just 45 miles down the road, Joe Bruno Stadium.
They played it in Colony.
Oh, okay.
They didn't play Joe. Joe has only been around for a while, but they were over by the airport.
Okay. Well, Buck Showalter was the manager, and Mariano Rivera was on the in that team. And they were a trip double A or double A.
I think double A because I believe in the Columbus area, Stump Merrill was the manager for many years,
and that was the triple A.
That was the triple A.
All right, so they had Mariano Rivera, Bernie Williams, Derek Jeter, and you can tell.
Rick Thompson didn't play for them, did he?
No, I was on single A. I never moved off of single A. But I got to tell you, the bench was always warm.
Yes.
I mean, there was always one spot that when the pitcher came off the mound, I used to let him sit there because it was warmed up for him.
Yeah, that's good.
But you could tell at that point in a career that they were going to be great players.
Yeah.
So there's got to be a point in the minor leagues where you can tell.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, like you said, it's a big business, and contracts mean a lot now when you're paying huge amounts of money. And so this talent, because you talked about Tampa Bay and Toronto, they weren't that great to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when the Yankees went down there and owned Tampa Bay, even when they were in their World Series times.
Mm-hmm.
But they added some really young players, like you said, that are all-stars, and they whipped the Yankees this year. And Toronto did, too.
There's so – kind of like the article that we're talking about, there's a lot more facts and a lot more consideration today more than ever because the contracts are so expensive. The Major League Baseball players' annual contract has some complexities. But – and it's a gamble because, you look at these small market teams, the Pittsburghs of the world, that have talent But they have to trade them away because they can't afford them eventually.
Right.
So their annual pay, I mean, I remember looking at Pittsburgh at one point. They got more from, because there's a revenue sharing formula and all that. They got more in revenue sharing than their entire payroll. So if the Pittsburgh Pirates, who at one point were just a perennial favorite in the National League, when the Willie Stargells of the world play there, Manny Sanguin, people like that, Roberto Clemente. And so forth. But because the smaller markets can't afford the big talent, it's left up to the New Yorks of the world, the LAs, the Texas, so they're spending just millions and millions and millions of dollars because they can afford it. And again, but that's a little bit about all sports, but nonetheless, you're seeing that it comes into play. And I guess my question is, why not bring younger people up?
Yeah.
Because it's working, the younger pitchers, but, you know, you look at Snell, who was a Cy Young winner in Tampa Bay.
Yep.
I don't know how old he was, 21, 22, 23?
Yeah.
And even like Coney and Roger Clemens, all these guys were pitching young.
Yeah. Well, the Yankees do have a young guy that won, what was it, 12 games in a row last year, but he started to tail off after that. But he was a young pitcher, so I look for him to get back on track.
You know, we all know in every occupation, there is the major league component, and it's you might have the talent to play baseball better than you and I might have been able to play. However, what's it like to play in a major city?
Yeah.
You know, because of the attention, the money, the distractions, all that. Is it easier to play in Pittsburgh or Kansas City or places like that? And the answer, of course, is yes. It's easier because you don't have the distraction. We've seen everybody who are, you know, Cy Young winners come to New York and get their psyche gets ruined because it's just a different animal.
Sure.
Same thing in Boston and L.A. I mean, these guys are – it's such a focal point. These young guys don't know how to do it. But I think you want to bring them up at a younger age so that we can get them to acclimate.
Yeah. Hey, again, you're listening to WSPN 91.1 FM Skidmore Radio. And we're here with our co-host, Pat Kane. He's a regular co-host, but he's also a great – guest because he's a wealth of knowledge that he's gotten from me over the years. But anyway, that's what's going on in baseball a little bit. So hopefully we'll get, you know, hopefully we're going to get into spring training at 22 days. I you know, have my fingers crossed that they can get this thing settled. Anyway, we're going to move on now, and right now it is sunny and 9 below 0. So, you know what?
Can the we sun another hour just so that it'll warm up before I have to go out to the car.
Right. The sun doesn't mean a thing. I want to tell you, but anyway, Penn, I want to talk a little bit about the weather.
Okay.
And all the hysteria about climate change.
Okay.
And I did some research on hurricanes,
okay.
All right? And they kept track of hurricanes in three categories, storms, hurricanes, and major hurricanes since 1880, all right? So I just want to give you some during the different eras, all right? So in 1870, you had 11. Now, these are major storms, okay? 11 major storms, 10 hurricanes. Two of them were major hurricanes. And we go to 1901. You had 13 storms, 6 hurricanes, 0 major hurricanes. We'll go to 1916. You had 15 storms, 10 hurricanes, 5 major hurricanes. Okay. Then you go to 1926, 11 storms, 8 hurricanes, 6 major hurricanes. And 1933, 20 storms, 11 hurricanes, 6 major hurricanes. From 1981 to 2020, we had 12 storms, 7 hurricanes, and 2 major hurricanes. Now, that's an average.
Oh, that was the average every year?
Of 1981, no, from 1981 to 2020, the average in that time span was 12 storms, 6.5 hurricanes, and 2 major hurricanes. Yep. Now, you might get 4 major hurricanes in 1 year.
Sure, but the average.
And then in 2 years, you may not get any major hurricanes, but that's the average. So when you look back from 1870,
You were alive back then, too, weren't you?
Yeah. Well, a little before that, I shook Abraham Lincoln's hand.
Oh, did you?
As he was going into the Ford Theater. Yeah.
That's good.
But anyway, I think what the point I'm making is that there are so many, there's so much fear-mongering going on now about the weather. And, you know, over history, and this is from the National Weather Service, by the way. This isn't from Rick Thompson's Weather Forecast Center. But over the history, if you listen to the top weather forecasters, mm-hmm. And the National Weather Service, I think, would be one of the top ones, you'll see a pattern mm-hmm. that develops maybe every a cycle, every 10 years or whatever. And I don't know. I mean, a lot of people believe in climate change. Personally, I don't. I don't see anything that's way different. You know, I know AOC, our congresswoman from Queens, believes it's because of cow farts. And, you know, and that could be a valid, thing. I think,
How do you measure cow farts?
Well, you got to stand behind a cow, and that's not a pleasant job. And you got to meter.
I do have one weather-related good news.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you haven't heard, there is a phenomenal ice sculpture event going on in Lake George.
That's right.
If you go up there, Gaslight Village, the old Gaslight Village property, yep. apparently, and I've not seen it, I've just heard about it, it's an incredible structure
that
you literally have to pay money to go see. But there's a company that does, I don't know, four or five locations around the country that does this, put this on. I can't wait to go there because as a kid, I used to go to the Lake George Winter Carnival.
That's right.
And, you know, the lake was frozen over by this point.
Well, I did go by that last week. I took a ride with a friend of mine up to... what's the smokehouse there in Warrensburg?
Oscars.
And on the way back, we went through Lake George, and there were still some people chiseling and doing that, but we're talking about massive ice structures.
And we should all go.
And it's like a little city.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's going to be hard to get a ticket on the weekends.
Yeah. You can go online. It's $30 a person, so it's not cheap, but the amazing work they do, it's all done by hand.
Yes.
And, I mean, these things were... Oh my God, 20 feet high?
Oh, yeah.
It's huge.
But if you get a chance, I mean, those of us who are local can run up there during the week and see it. Now, granted, we know it gets dark fairly early, but they light it up. So it might be even nicer at night. Who knows?
Who knows? It's got to be. I mean, with the lights bouncing off that ice. Yeah. Well, Pat, our time has come.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I mean, you're here all the time. Like I said, you're smarter than I am about a lot of things, and I fake it through. But anyway, right now we're going to turn it over to Homer Charbonneau and his fantastic music from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And you think my favorite songs are good? Well, Homer's are exceptional. So, Homer, I'm going to turn it over to you, and it's good to see you again.
Good to see you too, Rick. Thank you so much, and good morning, everyone.